This is a Monday edition of Ozarks at Large. A regular feature to begin a new week on our program is a collaboration with OzarksUnbound.com in an effort to discuss local issues with newsmakers. To mark the first day of classes at the University of Arkansas, we invited the Chancellor of the University, G. David Gerhardt, to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Christopher Spencer, the owner and publisher of Ozarks Unbound, joined me in the studio to ask the Chancellor about lottery scholarships, Act 182, and we asked the Chancellor about what's expected to be the largest enrollment in the school's history.
We expect that we'll have very close, if not over, 21,000 students, and it's going to be the largest freshman class that we've ever had in the history of the institution. We've actually caught up with our goal several years early. We thought we would have this size in 3 or 4 years, but 21,000 is really extraordinary, and you know, it's put a strain on us in terms of classes, finding classrooms, labs particularly, but I think we've got all that pretty figured out now. And rooms, we did have to rent some rooms over by Baum Stadium, some private space over there to accommodate all the students that wanted rooms. But we're pretty much got that handled, I think. We also took back a Wilson Sharp House, which had been vacant for a number of years. We had to extract the mold out and replace carpeting and furnishings and totally air-conditioned it. And it's really nice space. And we also did some other renovations to some other residence facilities. But I think we're in great shape. You know, it's amazing that we have grown this fast. The last couple of years, we've had tremendous growth. And I really think that a large part of that is due to the work of Suzanne McCray, who is just an extraordinary, talented administrator. And she used to be with the Honors College, and she's now, of course, the Vice Provost for Enrollment Management, Enrollment Services, and she is just doing a fantastic job.
You mentioned that you got to numbers a little bit early. Part of that, I guess, was the lottery scholarship.
Yes, we think the lottery certainly has had an impact. I would guess that probably maybe 400 students to the plus. And the reason I say it's not more than that is because evidence shows that a student, if they really want to go to college, they will find a way to do that. And generally how they do that is through loans. That's not a good thing in terms of the debt that they graduate with. And about 50% of our students have debt, and the average debt is about $20,000 per student. So the lottery will, in effect, eliminate the debt of a lot of students that have to use that to come to school. But it's money that we would not get, you know, it's not new money, let me put it that way. It's resources that we would already receive. But the reason I say 400, maybe 500 is because we do exit interviews. I guess you wouldn't really call them exit interviews. We do interviews of students that decide not to come. In other words, they've signed up, they have told us they're coming, and then for some reason they don't end up coming. We do email to them and phone calls to determine why they did not come. And evidence shows that the last couple of years, about 300 students indicated that they did not come because of finances. They just simply didn't feel they could afford to come. So if you, you know, use that evidence, we think maybe 400 or 500 students. But there's no question that it's benefiting higher education. I think it's a good thing, regardless of whether or not you believe in lotteries. And I know there are a lot of people in the state that don't. It is benefiting people and their ability to be able to come to college. And I think that's probably a good thing.
There was a recent article that mentioned some of the parents being less than thrilled with maybe their child not getting a, you know, an amount of money in the scholarships. I'm wondering, have you received, has your office received, any personal phone calls from parents asking about the process and curious why their child didn't get a scholarship?
We have. We've gotten some emails. We've gotten some letters and phone calls. A course, what has happened is that the student who is not your typical student that would come at age 18.
The non-traditionals,
the non-traditional,
right?
Yes. The non-traditional students really did not get the largest percentage of the resources that were available. And they did it on sort of a scale. If it looked as though you were making progress, then you had a much higher likelihood of getting a scholarship, as to where if you had dropped out and had not made any progress toward your degree, you might not get the resources. So it was somewhat complex. And we've gotten some letters from people like that. The good news is that those people that qualified, that had at least a 19 ACT and a 2.5 grade point average out of high school, did get the scholarship. And all of the persons that applied and were traditional students did get the scholarship.
Your 18-year-old that's going to college for
exactly,
the first time.
Exactly. Sort of, and that's a good thing. That's a great thing. It's unfortunate that the others didn't get it. But, you know, they just didn't have enough money. It was a practical issue.
And when it comes to the scholarships, was there any requirement that you be a citizen? I know you have to be a resident, but do you also have to be like a U.S. citizen?
Yes. Well, yes, you do. You require a Social Security number.
Okay.
And so because of that, it really, in a sense, required you to be a U.S. citizen. That's been a difficult problem for us, frankly. And we've gone on record that we think that that's not a good regulation. Actually, the law doesn't necessarily state that, but it is a directive by the state, by the governor's office, that we require a Social Security number. It used to be that if you graduated from a bona fide high school, you would be considered to be able to have in-state tuition. And that's how we operated. We asked for Social Security numbers, but we didn't require it. Now that we've been given a directive that we have to require it, we literally have to verify that the Social Security,
there is a verification process.
There is, that,
okay.
That the Social Security numbers are correct. And the first year, we had a number of students that had to drop out because they simply couldn't afford the out-of-state tuition. Now, a lot of people, this is a very controversial subject, and I understand that and appreciate it, but what is important to remember is that these students are students that came here when they were young. Most of them came with their parents when they were 7, 8 years old or younger.
Came from another country, you're saying?
Most of them from Mexico or South America or Central America. They came here perhaps legally on work visas, their parents did, and then maybe stayed illegally. Or some of them may have even actually come illegally and have been working here and sort of working under the radar. But the sins of the parents, in our estimation, should not be the sins of the children. And people say, well, send them back, let them get here, you know, under the existing law. Well, the problem with that is there's no really way to do that. These people didn't necessarily grow up in Mexico or in Central America. They came here as young kids. They don't know anything back in their country of birth. And they speak English with an Arkansas accent. You know, they've been involved in the band and playing football in, you know, a variety of different activities. And it's not really practical to send them back. Where do you send them back? And so we've gone on record that we think the passage of the DREAM Act, the federal DREAM Act, is the way to go. And it requires that you be in this country for a period of time. There are several requirements. Mm-hmm. I think
what essentially that do, you think?
What it would do is it would give these young people access to the American Opportunity System, give them the opportunity, since they grew up here, to become United States citizens without a 20-year waiting time, and frankly, without being deported back to their country, where in many cases, if not most cases, they don't even have family, they don't know anybody back in their home country. They came here quite young, and many of them, frankly, don't even speak Spanish back in the country of their origin. They grew up, you know, as if they were American citizens. So it's a real problem in this country that I don't think, frankly, a lot of people completely understand. A lot of people feel that, you know, these are illegal aliens that are teeming across the border, you know, and across the Rio Grande, and it's not that way at all. These are great students. I have actually met with most of the students that got caught in that, you know, time.
What did they
period.
Have to say?
And they're extraordinary young people. I mean, just, you know, many of them sat and openly wept in my office about, you know, just wanting to be able to get a degree and have an education. And, you know, it's not like we are keeping Arkansans or American citizens from accessing higher education because we want to grow. What we are basically doing is we're helping these young people to get a degree, which is going to help Arkansas economically, socially. We know that people that live in Arkansas are healthier, they're wealthier, they're wiser. They're much less likely to be on the state dole if they have a degree. So it makes sense to let these people get a degree. The Supreme Court ruled a number of years ago that people in that status do have a right to access primary and secondary education, but unfortunately did not carry it as far as to say that they can go to higher education because, as we all know, there's no right that a person has to a higher education in this country. It is, in fact, a privilege to be able to get a higher education. So it's a problem that needs to be solved. President Obama is in favor of the DREAM Act. I think he will be pushing it. There are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that favor the DREAM Act. And so we're just hopeful that people will understand that this is a good thing for America. It's a good thing for this country. And we'll be supportive of it.
Our conversation with the Chancellor from the University of Arkansas, G. David Gearhart, continues just ahead on Ozarks at Large. The discussion will include the possible strain on faculty with a large enrollment and how the university plans to increase the number of Arkansas residents with college degrees. That's just ahead on Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Many Mondays on Ozarks, I'm joined by Christopher Spencer from OzarksUnbound.com to discuss local matters. This week, we invited Dr. G. David Gearhart, the Chancellor of the University of Arkansas, into our studio.
You mentioned the strains on infrastructure with the largest enrollment. Are you concerned that there might be strains on faculty, teaching assistants?
We actually have tried to monitor that very closely. And we added close to 20 new tenure-track faculty this year. First time we've done that of any size in many, many years. And we had to do it because of the increase in the number of students that we have, and we want to keep our faculty-student ratio, you know, within a reasonable level. We've also had to hire some temporary faculty to fill certain subject areas, and we've been putting well over $1 million a year for the last few years, particularly into arts and sciences, to hire faculty. We're hopeful that we will also hire more tenure-track faculty next year if we have the budget to do it. We need to hire more faculty, and we've made a commitment to do that. So there have been strains on having available faculty, but I think we're in pretty good shape right now. I would guess we've got to increase our faculty probably the next 2, maybe 3 years if we continue to grow, and then perhaps level off. But We've not tended to put our resources into faculty positions, and frankly, we're behind in that regard. And we've made a commitment, the provost and I have made a commitment, that we're going to hire more tenure-track faculty. Last night, we had new faculty reception at Fowler House, and, you know, it's just wonderful to see the new bright faces that are joining the faculty, great credentialed group of people. And we had a large number there last night. We had about 100 people come to the reception last night, and many of them were new faculty, and we're just really delighted to have sort of new blood entering into the university. It's always exciting to see that.
Accelerate Arkansas has a recent study that suggests by 2018, 62% of jobs in the United States will require a degree, a college degree. Right now, about 18% of our Kansans have a degree. Mm-hmm. As the largest university in the state, as the flagship of the land-grant college, what does the University of Arkansas have to do to help that skills mismatch?
It's an obligation that we take very, very seriously. We are committed to work with the governor and with the legislature to do all that we can to get our citizens educated with a four-year degree. We are fortunate at the university in that among public institutions, we have the highest degree fulfillment rate of any other institution in Arkansas, and that's a good thing. We'd like to push that up even higher. Our six-year graduation rate is about 60% now, and we'd frankly like to be on up into the 70th percentile range. But increasing the population of our student body, I think, is one way. Having a curriculum that matches the needs and desires of students in a modern society is another way. We're working at that. But we take that challenge and that obligation very, very seriously, and we've got to do something to increase the number of our citizens that have that degree. As you mentioned, 18%. If you look at all citizens of Arkansas, every level, that percentage is 25 years of age and up. But if you look at all citizens, every level, it's about 12%. Mm. So it's abysmal, frankly, and we're not doing a good job at it. We are next to last in the country, last being West Virginia, and we've got to work very, very hard to change that. And I think, frankly, that that is going to be the major way that we change economic development in this state. It's going to be the main way that we increase our citizens having a better life, you know, and giving our citizens a better life and making them healthier and happier. Less number of our citizens in prison. I mean, all that has to do with higher education. And economic development is inextricably tied to what, you know, colleges and universities are doing. We preach that a lot, and we say that a lot, and believe it, and that is one of the reasons why, you know, funding higher education is so terribly important in this state, that we've got to put our resources where it's going to make the most difference economically. And getting people their four-year degree is absolutely vital.
Do you think Act 182 strengthens the education that...
Yeah, you know, there were probably some unintended consequences of Act 182. It was passed overwhelmingly by the General Assembly. Basically, what it says is that the state core should be the core for all institutions, and that the whole purpose behind it was a good thing, which was to make transferability from two-year institutions to four-year institutions something that was could be done with ease. I think that's a good thing. I think that the basis behind the law, the reason for it, was a good thing. How it affected us was that we have had a fairly sizable core requirement in arts and sciences. And we've gotten beaten up a little bit because some of the national organizations have said that, you know, we shouldn't be tampering with the core requirements. The truth of the matter is that the law says that your general core has to be so many hours. However, you can have other requirements within majors. And so what we're doing is simply transferring some of those requirements that we think are vital to a strong liberal arts curriculum, strong arts and science curriculum, and for that matter, other curriculums in other colleges. We're simply transferring those requirements into the major. There have been some controversies over that. There have been some faculty that have not agreed with that. But I think it's fair to say that the majority of faculty, particularly in arts and sciences, believe it's the right thing to do. We have not had a curriculum review for over 50 years, a major curriculum review, long overdue to have that. And we actually had started that process before Act 182 came around. So we're basically allowing the faculty to do this. They've been working on it through the summer. They will work on it through the fall. There will be a vote by the faculty. There will be, I think, if the faculty decide to go this route, some good things that come out of it. If they decide to move some of the requirements into the major, then it will open up the possibility of having more room for students to have minors in arts and sciences. And that's a very good thing. And I could see even the possibility that the college may require there to be minors. When I graduated from my alma mater, a small school in Missouri, you know, I had two minors and a major, and I felt that it really helped prepare me for, you know, life's journey. So it's been controversial. It's been difficult. But I think we're getting to the end of the process. It has been a process. And there's no question that we're going to have a strong curriculum. We're going to have basically most of the same requirements that we've had in the past. The one thing that's been somewhat controversial is that some folks thought that we were doing away with language requirements, but in reality what is happening is those requirements are going to go into the particular majors. And we think it will open up a lot of other opportunities for world languages, other programs, other perhaps degrees, and certainly other courses. So it's a process that's being led by our provost, and she's doing a good job to try to, you know, get through the red tape part of it, comply with the law, but also keep a strong curriculum.
Chancellor David Gearhart visited our studio in the Carver Center for Public Radio late last week. There is more from our conversation online at OzarksAtLarge.com. Our Monday conversations with newsmakers on Ozarks at Large are a collaboration with OzarksUnbound.com and its owner and publisher, Christopher Spencer. We'd love to hear your comments about this segment or any story or interview you hear on Ozarks at Large. You can email us by going to either OzarksAtLarge.com or KUAF.com. And tomorrow on Ozarks, some of the people affected by the start of the semester not on campus.
It is our busy season, and it starts and ends this week. It's We go on a wait for our apartments in February to get ready for August move-ins.
How apartments catering to student customers have changed over the years. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.